Welcome to American Priorities with your host, Bill Federer. Stay tuned for the next exciting hour as we cover crises confronting our country and see them come into focus in light of history. Passing to posterity the blessings of freedom. And now your host for American Priorities, Bill Federer.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is great to be with you today. And one of the leading groups that is standing up for your freedom and my freedom is ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org. Its founder is William J. Murray. He has been up in Washington, D.C. for years, fighting and lobbying and standing up for the values that we hold so dear. And he is our guest today, and he's going to give us an update on several different things that are happening, and you need to know about these. Bill, welcome to American Priorities.
Great to be back on with you, Bill.
Well, many things that we want to talk about, but one of them just It turns my stomach, and that is the killing of Christians in Muslim lands. This is forgotten. It's ignored, sometimes even by Fox News. But you have connections with the Christians that are in Baghdad and in Egypt. Tell us what's going on over there.
Well, it's intensifying. The persecution of Christians is intensifying, and this has been a continuing cycling thing, with Islam for centuries. And it is getting particularly bad again. The people talk about moderate Islam and how Islam was moderate, quote unquote, in Spain, and how moderate was, moderate, quote unquote, under the Ottoman Empire. But moderate meant instead of just slaughtering people, they were semi-slaves and forced to pay a tax. But to some of that, there is a little bit of truth in that when there are large body of Christians in a predominantly Islamic area, it moderates to some degree Islam. And this is a kind of a long answer to your question, but I want to go back to just 30 years ago when I first started working in what some call the West Bank, which is actually Samaria, and in Bethlehem. In Bethlehem, 30 years ago, when it was under Israeli control, Muslim women could walk down the street. They would sometimes wear dresses, maybe even slacks. They would have their heads uncovered. Sometimes that they would wear a makeup. They could do and say things and be educated in many of the same way that Christian women were. That is because the majority population at the time of Bethlehem was Christian, and there was a large Christian presence over the entire West Bank. And women in particular were treated much better than in other Islamic areas. After Israel pulled out of those areas and the Christian population got more and more under pressure, more and more Christians left. Now Christians are a small minority in Bethlehem, and it is so bad for women there now that even Christian women cannot go out onto the street with their heads uncovered or to walk alone, or they'll be spit on and called names by Muslims. Frequently, Christian women, even married women, are kidnapped and forced into Islamic marriages. And so, as the Christian population becomes more and more less, and there is less of a good example of behavior, and as the Islamic population gets larger and larger, the mullahs become more and more aggressive in their talks of jihad and destruction and death to those of other faiths. Iran is a very good point. Iran was, I think, 12 to 15% Christian in 1900. I think it was 5 or 6% Jewish. And even though the remainder was 80% Muslim or so, there was overall fairly good relations in Iran, although there were tensions, but the Christian influence in Iran made it more or less under the Shah a secular nation, with many, many Christians holding high positions in government. Now there are virtually no Christians, and I think there's 7 Jews left in Iran. We see the same thing happening in Iraq. Iraq, when we invaded it, was a secular nation. It was somewhere between 7 and 10% Christian. Many Christians held high positions in the secular government. And now you have basically an Islamic Republic. You have two weeks ago, another attack on a Christian church. In which,
yeah, tell us about these attacks. These are sort of go unreported, and I think that it's so important, ladies and gentlemen, for us to know what is happening right now to Christians in Muslim countries. And it gives us a little insight that we're going to segue into probably after the break as to the advance of Islam in America and efforts like what was going on in Oklahoma. But tell us about the churches in Baghdad and in Egypt.
Well, just recently, of course, 2 weeks ago, you had an invasion, which was actually reported accurately in most of the world. In the United States, it wasn't, of where Muslims invaded a Coptic Christian, a Chaldean Christian church in Baghdad. The first thing they did was shot two priests in the head, cold blood dead. They wore suicide vests. They wrangled people up into rooms. They held them hostage. They were destroyed and defiled the inside of the church, and then finally threw hand grenades into the rooms where they had they were holding the Christians. More than 30 were killed, 50 severely injured, some lost limbs. In the United States, we reported this. It was an evening mass. It was a Coptic Catholic church, an evening mass, and in the United States we reported it that the stock exchange in Baghdad had been attacked, and then the attackers went into the Catholic church. Look, this is ridiculous. It was evening. The stock exchange is closed. The reality was that a bomb was set off in front of the stock exchange in order to attract guards and other people away from the church so that the church could be invaded and Christians could be killed.
Now, I've saw an email that went around with horrible pictures of this church and the machine gun bullets and the bodies cut in half. I mean, just unbelievable torturing that went on. And yet our media seems to be silent on this. I mean, where's our president standing out against intolerance?
Well, this is the strangest part of the whole attack. I may have to dig it up for just a minute, but I definitely want to read this exact quote to you. But it's what came out of the White House after this attack that I think was the most shocking. And I have this quote up at my website. But,
and your website, by the way, is religiousfreedomcoalition.org. Religiousfreedomcoalition.org.
Right. I want to read this quote. It's under international in my November 5th update. This is what the White House said, and I want people to listen to this closely. The United States strongly condemns this senseless act of hostage-taking and violence by terrorists linked to al-Qaeda in Iraq that occurred Sunday in Baghdad, killing so many innocent Iraqis. Do you notice what's missing?
The word Christian.
There is nothing in the statement, and it's a little bit lengthier than this. There was nothing in the statement stating that this was an attack on a church. There was nothing in it talking about persecuted minorities. Nothing. The attack could have been anywhere on anybody in Iraq.
Well, the Chaldean Christians have been in existence from probably the first century A.D., and they have been continually persecuted. And William J. Murray is letting us know about their fate. When we get back, we're going to talk about this unholy alliance developing between the radical Muslims and the radical left in America. How come the liberal media is actually in favor of Islam? William J. Murray is our guest. Bill Fetter is your host. Here we are on American Priorities over the Freedom Radio FM network. You can listen online at freedomradiofm.com. And we'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
your kids sometimes dress like they just climbed out of a clothing donation bin?
Grace-based advice from Dr. Tim Kimmel on today's Family Matters Minute.
Let's face it. Sometimes the stuff our kids wear and the way they fix their hair is, well, stupid looking. It's as if they have no concept of what looks flattering on them. But hey, there are high school yearbooks that contain proof that most of us parents were also a bit clueless when we dressed for school. Where we need to check ourselves is our tendency to make a moral or biblical issue out of it. Just because something is ugly doesn't make it wrong. We will alienate our kids if we start to wrap our fashion preferences in a guise of moral and spiritual lectures. Modesty is a moral and scriptural issue. Dumb looking isn't. It just means that we walk about 10 paces behind them when we go out in public.
Tim wants to help you transform your family through grace-based advice. More information is available at familymatters.net.
Freedom Radio FM would like to thank our listeners and sponsors for their financial support of American Priorities. It's with your continued support that programs like American Priorities continue to find a place on our network. If you would like to make a contribution, just log on today at freedomradiofm.com and click on the donate button. Create a one-time gift or start a monthly contribution. Any amount is appreciated. If your business or organization would like to become a sponsor of this or any other program on Freedom Radio FM, please call 888-533-3551 and dial extension 11. Freedom Radio FM, lighting the way.
Yeah, I'll have the chicken.
And I'll have your triple decker hot fudge sundae. Oh, and 2 pounds of broccoli.
For lunch?
I love their hot fudge sundaes, and this one's huge.
But aren't you on a diet?
Yeah, but I ordered broccoli.
So?
Broccoli's good stuff. It makes up for the ice cream sundae.
But you're just eating more food. 2 pounds of broccoli?
Well, it's a lot of ice cream.
Do you believe that doing good deeds can make up for your past sins?
Hey, Bob, you always wanted my guitar. Well, here, it's yours.
Wow. What do I owe you?
Nothing. I blamed this guy at work for something I did, and it got him fired, and he committed suicide. So to make up for it, I'm giving you my really expensive guitar.
What does that have to do with me?
Nothing. I just need to do something nice to balance out the bad with some good in my life.
But that was pretty bad.
Well, this is a pretty nice guitar.
There's only one way to deal with the penalty of sin. Forgiveness. Have you asked for God's forgiveness? Another message from Lifeline Productions, located on the web at lifelinepro.com.
Now, back to American Priorities with your host, Bill Federer.
William J. Murray has appeared on ABC, CBS, NBC Nightly News, Nightline, Fox News programs, and he is our guest today. He is the chairman of Religious Freedom Coalition. ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org is the website. And Bill, immediately after, matter of fact, before 9/11, you were warning America on the threat of Islamic Jihad, and you're still doing this, and hopefully we're waking some people up. But tell us what's going on here.
Well, you know, what is happening is actually amazing and nonsensical. I just mentioned that the particular update, the November 5th update that I had. I published a photograph that I found, and the photograph was of Arena Huffington and Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York and Imam Fazal Rolf. And this was at a party the first week of November that Arena Huffington had put on in Soho. Very, very expensive thing. Everything she does is expensive and glamorous. You know, she's for poor people. She never wears a dress in public that costs less than $3,000 or $4,000. Goes everywhere in limousines, fly first class, private jets, just because she's for poor people, you understand, and she's a liberal. And she gets a lot of funding from far-left pro-legalized drugs, George Soros.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was watching Glenn Beck just the other night, and Glenn Beck talked about how George Soros funds Arianna Huffington.
A lot of it, but, you know, she needs billionaires to fund her because she spends a lot of money. She is a very glamorous person. And so here she is. She rented this big ballroom because she was going to give out, she was going to honor people who were doing such good for America. And, of course, one of the people that she invited there to honor was Imam Faisal Rolf. Now, this is the imam who at one time owned three properties, slum properties in New Jersey. Two of them have been taken away from him, repossessed. A third one is in such bad condition and is so bed bug and rat infested that a judge in New Jersey has put the property under court protection, where all the rent goes directly to the court in order to fix up the building because it's in such horrible condition. And this is a man that's standing next to a mayor, and they're all smiling, and they're because of course they're all for poor people, I guess, you know. But the photograph represents something far worse. The photograph represents the far left. Arena Huffington is far left. Nobody can dispute this. Michael Bloomberg, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, is part of the political elite, and Imam Faisal Rauf represents the so-called moderate Islam in the United States. Although he cannot use the T word or say that any Muslim ever committed terrorism, and he says that the United States was responsible for 9/11, and he believes in jihad. Other than that, he's a fine moderate Muslim. But here are the three of them and smiling in this photograph. And it represents a marriage. And we see this marriage. It does not matter what television network you are watching. It doesn't matter whether you're watching CNN or whether you're watching Fox or whether you're ABC or NBC. Anytime there's a discussion program, and whether it's the Ground Zero Mosque or any other issue that comes up about Islam, those on the left, those that represent the Democratic Party, those that represent the liberals in America, are always defending Islam. And it is just so curious. Here we have this alleged religion that in most Islamic nations, the punishment for being homosexual is death. The punishment for adultery is death. The punishment for leaving Islam and being converted is death. The punishment for a woman showing any part of her flesh in public is a severe whipping. Women have to have when they're testifying in a court, have to have a man testify on their behalf, or it's automatically their testimony doesn't count if they're testifying, you know, against someone else. A man can verbally divorce his wife, kick her out, and he gets custody of the children automatically. I could go on and on and on and on. But here's the odd thing. You have this Huffington person and the rest of the far left. And what do they champion? They're constantly championing women's rights. They want a woman, when she's hired as an engineer in the United States, to receive the same wages as a man who's worked there for 10 years. They want women to have all these special rights and special benefits, and they want special protections for homosexuals, and nobody can criticize homosexuality, even if they're quoting out of the Bible, and they are married, just literally married to a religion that is hateful and bigoted toward all of those things. And you look at it, and it is just, the concept is almost too much to grasp and too bizarre to grasp.
Yeah, it's a psychological disconnect. You know, I for years talked about how in strict Muslim countries, they prohibit public Judeo-Christian expression. And the radical left, the liberals in America, want to prohibit public Judeo-Christian expression. So there is this marriage between the radical Muslim and the radical left homosexual gay agenda. It's bizarre.
But it's the only thing that Islam and the far left in the United States have in common is a hatred for Christianity and the Bible. That's the only thing they have in common. And the far left in America hates Christianity so bad. They just hate and despise those that are true believers so badly that they see this enemy of Christianity, this group of people that goes out and wantonly murders and kills people based upon their religion. And they say, they're on our side. They hate Christians too, so they must be okay.
You know, I... was thinking about a parasite, an intestinal worm. It thinks of one thing only, growing. It's incapable of imagining what will happen when it takes over the host victim. It'll die too. And so the radical left thinks of one thing only, tearing down everything Judeo-Christian. They're incapable of imagining what will happen once they accomplish their goal. God forbid they'll wake up and realize they just tore down their best wall of defense against radical Islam. It's like that quote from that one homosexual in Holland. He said, "I only learned how to enjoy my liberties, not defend them."
Yeah. Well, and that is it. And the reality is that you take a look at who is defending America, and who joins the military, and who serves this nation, even when it gets down to police and firefighters. And the overwhelming majority are individuals who are God-fearing. Who believe in the Lord, the overwhelming majority, and believe that they should have service. And those that sit back and shoot off their mouths and enjoy those liberties and try to destroy the country, and who don't serve, are normally the liberals.
You know, do you think Prince Al-Walid bin Talal has anything to do? He's the fourth richest man in the world. And he recently, a couple years ago, bought 7% interest in News Corp, which owns Fox News. And his idea is to do jihad, but do it through money, where you buy influence. And do you see some of that in this mix going on?
Well, yes. But you know, I think we discussed this the last time I was on your show, and it is, unfortunately, the United States is a debtor nation. We now see that the Chinese government is going to probably invest a huge sum of money into General Motors as it comes out of bankruptcy. And you know, we owe 40%, and you know, this is mind-boggling. 40% of the United States budget is done on borrowed money. There is no amount of taxes that could be collected in order to replace the. You'd have to bankrupt the nation and just shut down business to collect enough taxes in order to cover the part of the federal budget that is now borrowed money, 40%. And the majority, the Treasury Department shows that about 50% of that money comes from foreign sources. The largest chunk, according to the Treasury pie chart, comes from China. But you know what? That's not true, because they show a very, very small amount owed by Arab countries, that we owe to Arab countries. But that is a lie. You take a look on the other side of the pie chart that is supposed to be domestic, and a large amount of the United States debt is owned by hedge funds. Hey, guess where that hedge fund money is coming from? Well, we don't know, because the Congress of the United States allows to keep the hedge funds to keep secret their investors. Many of the hedge fund money that owns the United States debt belongs to the good prince and others like him. They are the because of the, rather than sovereign debt, this is independent debt of all these various princes and wealthy Saudis that they have invested too. So the government of the United States owes, and we know exactly what the Bible says about debt. You know, it says very, very clearly that the debtor is the slave of the lender. And, you know, so we're not in a position to criticize Islam, and we have to pretend, even those within the government, even those within the media, whether it's Fox or to some degree, have to pretend that, it's just a few radicals, the problem isn't really Islam itself. They have to pretend that because of this debt.
Well, we're going to come back from the break and hear some more from William J. Murray on the Oklahoma law to ban Sharia law, and how CARE, the Center for American Islamic Relations, is suing so that they can have Sharia law in America. And taqiyya, is it possible? Is it okay for Muslims to lie to mask their intentions of what they intend to do? Bill Murray's been there. William J. Murray, he's been on the front lines for 30 years fighting for our values, and he is with us as our guest today. You're listening to American Priorities with Bill Federer. Our website is AmericanMinute.com if you'd like to sign up for my free daily emails, and FreedomRadioFM.com if you'd like to listen online or contribute, become a monthly supporter. And William J. Murray's website, ReligiousFreedomCoalition.org. We'll be right back on the flip side.
This is Walk the Way. I'm Jeff Klein. I was fortunate enough to be in Hiawatha, Michigan again not too long ago. It was one of those crisp fall mornings, and I had a lot on my mind, so I put on a hoodie, grabbed my cup of coffee, and set out for a walk with God along Lake Michigan. I couldn't help but notice the amazing homes, homes with massive windows and huge decks overlooking the water. Gorgeous, all of them. And crazy, these immense homes were all built on sand. Jesus' words popped in my mind. The foolish man built his house on the sand. And almost immediately this, do not be anxious for tomorrow. Never before had these verses been connected for me. But today, combined with the things that weighed on me, God put them together. I love how he talks to us. What did he want me to get? Could it be that our worries actually stem from what we build our lives on? Interesting. Ego, pride, status, a good economy, success. What's a solid foundation? What's your life built on? Let's talk about it on Facebook.com/walktheway.
I have heard it said that for the unlearned man, old age is like the winter, but for the wise men, old age is the harvest. Personally, I have never been more excited about the work God has given me to do. I have spent many years acquiring knowledge and hopefully a bit of wisdom. I finally feel like I'm becoming qualified to make a contribution. No one should resist growing old. Use today to acquire as much knowledge and wisdom as you can, and then ask God to give you a place to put it to good use for all your years on earth. This is David Jeremiah, encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover God's love for elders on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. That's Route66Life.com. Route 66, start your journey home today.
Welcome back to American Priorities. To become involved in today's discussion, call toll-free 888-533-3551. Now, here's your host, Bill Federer.
We have been talking with William J. Murray, and Bill, we have covered so far what Sharia law is. It allows men to beat their wives, allows them to lie, and you can't insult Islam. But we had a law passed in the state of Oklahoma outlawing this Sharia law, that we don't think that you should call Jews apes and pigs, that we don't think that you can beat women and so forth, and that you can divorce your wife by saying, I divorce you three times. And so Oklahoma passed a law outlawing Sharia law. Yet CARE, the Center for American-Islamic Relations, and I want you to tell us a little bit about that group, sued. What are we supposed to make of this?
Well, here is where this, first of all, the actual law that was passed in Oklahoma said that a court could not consider Sharia law when coming to a decision. That's what it said. Now, no court should be using international law, and we've had Supreme Court justices in the United States that said they use international law in order. But the reality is that nothing. It should only be American law. Things that were passed by state legislatures, things that were passed by the Congress of the United States, those should be the only things that a court is going on. Well, just before this happened, or months before this happened, up in New Jersey, a Muslim man had beaten and raped his wife, and he got into court. She was trying to leave him. She wanted to leave. She was forcibly kept and raped repeatedly, and so he was charged with this. And his attorney went into the court with an imam who was an expert and testified that he was a Muslim, and that under Muslim law it was impossible to rape or imprison a wife under Sharia law, and that he was following his customs and therefore was innocent. Believe it or not, the judge agreed and let the man go. Now, this was the prosecutor's filed an appeal on this case, and the man was rearrested, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Oklahomans and others have seen this, and they want to pass laws to make sure that this doesn't happen in their courtrooms as well. Well, here comes CARE, their little society for Islamic relations, and they have filed a lawsuit and have gotten an injunction. An injunction. Now, think about this: a judge in Oklahoma has filed an injunction against the law, so that any judge that wants to continue to consider Sharia law in determining a case can do so. This is absolutely insane. And particularly, and I don't think that people really understand what Sharia law is. Sharia law, Sharia finance, Islam, it is all one thing. This is not a separable. Islam does not believe in a separate civil government, and this is why Sharia law is so important to them. They want all aspects of their life and all justice to be brought forth only under Sharia.
Wow. You know, this effort to bring America underneath of Islam, and that what we see happening in Europe in 176 neighborhoods around Paris, and that it's, I heard the term lawfare. Instead of warfare, it's lawfare. That, in other words, they're waging jihad through our court. They've learned how to use our court systems against us.
Well, Europe, that may still be true in the United States, but in a lot of areas in Europe, particularly in the UK, it has gone beyond that. I know it wasn't reported by the media, but we had Veterans Day. The day that we have Veterans Day in the United Kingdom, they celebrate Armistice Day. At 11 o'clock on Armistice Day, all Britain comes to a stop for 2 minutes to honor their war dead. And the Muslims took to the streets during that 2 minutes on Monday on Veterans Day, two or three days ago. And on Armistice Day at 11 o'clock, Muslims took to the streets, and they burned the British symbol for Armistice Day, honoring the troops of poppies. They burned them, and they chanted, "British soldiers rot in hell." So this, in the UK in particular, this has gone past the stage of legal. They've won in the courts in Great Britain. There are local Sharia courts in the Islamic neighborhoods. The British police women are forced to wear Islamic hair covering.
Explain this for a second. Here is British police women who are not Muslim, but the government is forcing them to wear veils when they go into Muslim neighborhoods.
That's correct.
This is bizarre.
That is correct. Well, the female United States Marines in Afghanistan have to do the same thing. They have to wear veils in order to go into town.
You know, I was talking with a soldier. I spoke last week in Springfield, Missouri. They had a whole lot of Missouri state reps and state senators there. Great organization called the Young Conservatives. They give a Locke and Smith Award, John Locke, Adam Smith. But a soldier came up afterwards and said, because I lectured a little bit on Islam, and he said, "We weren't taught that. We were taught that," he was there in Iraq. He said, "The only thing we were taught about Islam is that you're not supposed to insult them, that you're supposed to be very, very..." I said, "You know what? When Muslims take over a country, one of the signs that that country has surrendered is that they submit to Islamic law that non-Muslims cannot insult Islam. And so for our military commanders to tell our soldiers they cannot insult Islam, they are telling our soldiers to act as if they had surrendered. So here we're sending a double signal. We're going in there acting as if we surrendered by not insulting them, but yet at the same time we're trying to show that we're the authority there. It's a dilemma."
Well, yes, and of course this double standard goes everywhere. We have this new body scanner situation going, and of course go back to CARE. CARE says that no Islamic woman can go through the scanner, no Islamic woman can be touched below the shoulders. You can see the political correctness in the airline. They're afraid to make young Muslim men go into the scanners. They're afraid they're going to be accused of profiling. The Muslim young Muslim men don't get pat downs. That's reserved, you know, for 4-year-old children that belong to Fox News anchors, which happened on one flight, and to 60 and 70-year-old men and good-looking white chicks, and other than that, but the Muslims are just left onto the airplanes anyway because we can't offend them. The political correctness that we have is endangering this entire nation, and the refusal, you know, going back to that photograph with Mayor Bloomberg, this is the most curious thing.
And by the way, Bloomberg appointed every member of the real estate board that approved the Ground Zero Mosque.
That is right. But going back to this photograph, and here you have, and remember this photograph that I'm talking about that shows Bloomberg between Huffington and Rauf, that this was after Rauf's building was taken over by the courts in New Jersey. It is after all the other reports of criminal activity by the actual developer who purchased the building there. And Bloomberg is Jewish. Bloomberg is Jewish. Islam is at its core anti-Semitic, and you know, we could go all the way back to Medina when of course you're an expert on this, so if I make an error, forgive me, but it was at Medina that Muhammad marched out all of the Jews after he conquered the town and had their heads chopped off, all the males.
Yeah, there were three tribes in Medina. These were Jewish tribes, and they let Muhammad in as a religious refugee, an immigrant, in the year 622 A.D., and they rejected his faith, so Muhammad goes into the pagan neighborhoods and organizes. He's sort of like a community organizer. Gets a following, goes back to the Jewish leaders, presents himself as a candidate of change, and the Jews said, okay, well, they make a treaty with him. Well, then some of Muhammad's followers back in Mecca get chased out of town, and they show up in Medina, and Muhammad permits them to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing his followers out. And so Muhammad has 300 warriors. They'd rob the caravans. The Meccans send 1,000 soldiers to protect their caravan, and Muhammad defeats them. And so Muhammad takes this, that Allah wants him to be a military leader. He goes back into the city of Medina, the three Jewish tribes that were there. He gets offended at the first two, confiscates their property, chases them out, breaking that treaty that he had entered into 5 years earlier, that set a precedent in Islam. When you're weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. But then the third Jewish tribe, he bottles them in their neighborhood for 25 days, and then he finally takes them out and, as you mentioned, cuts off the heads of about 700 men, sells the women and children into slavery. And so this three-step process that Muhammad used, he immigrated, he increased, he eliminated. So he immigrates to the city, then he increases the number of his followers, and then 5 years after coming to a Jewish city, he eliminates the Jews. So this three-step process is being used across the world, where they immigrate into a community, and then they increase the number of their followers, get involved in politics, and then those that resist, they get militant.
Right. But from that example, and this is what I try to explain to people, you know, and I wish I could have sat down with George W. Bush, who I still don't think gets it. But you know, as a Christian, I want to be more like Christ, and Muslims, of course, want to be more like Muhammad. Well, there is the example of Muhammad. That is who they want to be like, and this is one of the reasons for the overwhelming anti-Semitism, and in Islam, every single imam, including, I am sure, Imam Rauf, when he is teaching, if he teaches the Quran correctly, he teaches the Jews are the descendants of pigs. And here you have Mayor Bloomberg, the political elite, and I can't imagine that he doesn't know this, yet he accepts this man.
When we come back, I want you to talk about your No 9/11 Mosque website, no911.org mosque. Ladies and gentlemen, we're visiting with William J. Murray. He is the founder and director of religiousfreedomcoalition.org. Fascinating information that you don't get on the nightly news, but Bill has been a guest on ABC and CBS and Nightline and so forth, and we're thrilled to have him be our guest today on American Priorities. Our goal is to pass to posterity the blessings of freedom. We've been blessed in this land, and our kids deserve to inherit a land as good as what we inherited. Proverbs 13:22 says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children." Question: what kind of inheritance are we leaving to our children's children? Debt, insecurity, jihad? We'll be right back with our guest, William J. Murray. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Lighten Up, brought to you by Compassion International. Lighten Up is a moment to brighten your day and encourage your walk with Jesus. I'm Dr. Wes Stafford, president of Compassion, inviting you to join author, speaker, comedian, and grandfather Ken Davis sharing a lesson learned from Barbie.
Today, my five-year-old granddaughter walked up to me with her Barbie doll. She had just dressed her in one of her many outfits, sold separately, by the way. She held that doll up and said, "Do you think this dress makes my Barbie look big?" Now, that's a question that strikes fear into the heart of any man who's ever tried to answer it. I remember the first time Diane asked me that question about a new dress she had just purchased. No, wait, I don't remember because I lost consciousness. If you ever hear that question, men, I suggest you run. Pretend to faint or choke on something. I guess I'm not a big Barbie fan because it starts kids on that path of judging their worth by their appearance. I know of very few women who look like Barbie, even fewer who have as many clothes as Barbie. I remind my grandchildren over and over that it is the content of their heart, the quality of their character that counts, and that Christ's sacrifice on the cross sealed their value forever. That message is not supported by much of what we see in the world around them. Today, I remind you that God loved you so much, He gave His Son. For you, that makes you priceless. By the way, I like Cabbage Patch dolls. They look a lot more like me. Lighten up and live.
You've been listening to Lighten Up with Ken Davis. For more information, you can visit us on the web at compassion.com. I'm Dr. Wes Stafford, president of Compassion, encouraging you to lighten up.
Welcome back to American Priorities. To become involved in today's discussion, call toll-free 888-533-3551. Now, here's your host, Bill Federer.
Welcome back. We're visiting with William J. Murray, and religiousfreedomcoalition.org is the website. But, Bill, you have another website. Tell us about the 9/11.
911mosque.org.
Say that one more time.
No911mosque.org. I want to do just a little bit of history if I can. You know, I have been working on this issue when it wasn't an issue. And I remember I was at a luncheon back in George W. Bush was still president, the Soviet Union was collapsing. And Ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick was there. You know, our ambassador to the United Nations. And she was giving a presentation, and I was one of the experts at this lunch. And I don't know, there were 20 or 30 of us. And when she was done with hers, the questions opened, and I asked her, I said, "Madam Ambassador," I said, "as the Soviet Union is collapsing and their secular influence over the stands, that would be Afghanistan and all the other stands there, is diminished, and these return into the Islamic fold without secular direction, don't you think that we have a great deal to fear from Islamic extremism and perhaps even terrorism?" And she got this expression on her face and looked at me and said, "You're nuts. The Muslims are our friends."
Wow.
And you know, this has been the prevailing attitude among the elite, whether it is Democrats or whether it is Republicans, because they don't deal with real Muslims. They deal with people like Mubarak, the president of Israel, who is a debauching, secularized multimillionaire, or the Saudi princes, who are basically the same thing, and they give money to the jihadists so that they're left alone to their debauchery. And because the elite only deals with these quote secularized Muslims who aren't really Muslims, they have no understanding or comprehension of what Islam is about or what it does. And through the no91mosque.org site, we're trying to do a little bit of education about these people and what they're trying to do. One of the things that I really appreciate above anything, Bill, is that I'm not alone anymore. There's a Human Events just published an article by Robert Spencer, and Robert Spencer is the head of Jihad Watch, and
that's great.
He has just done a new article. It's up at Human Events. It's called "The Law is a Weapon." The Law is a Weapon. And it just has much of what we just finished talking about how the lawsuits that CARE brings in order to shut up opponents, like the lawsuit that they're filing against Geller in New York, and the other lawsuits that filed, and about the 57 governments of the Organization of Islamic Conference who are trying to pass a law to make it internationally against the law to criticize Islam. But I at least I'm not alone anymore. I remember back when Gary Bauer wasn't on my side. He was on the other side of the issue. He has now become finally, I think, in the last decade or so, aware of the threat that we face. This is not a small threat. This is about domination. And this mosque in New York, and I don't think I used this term on the show the last time I did this, but this Ground Zero Mosque, and everybody calls it a Ground Zero Mosque, it is not a mosque, it is a rabat. And a rabat, R-A-B-A-T, is a place that when the marauders, the jihadists, have invaded a country, have invaded a territory of infidels, and let's say they invade 100 miles into it in the old days or whatever, and then they would build as they continued to conquer it and terrorize, literally terrorize, they would build a rabat, and the rabat was a place of rest and recreation for the fighters and those who are committing acts of terror against the, quote, infidels, for them to return to it and rest and to get closer to Allah and closer to Muhammad before they went out and killed again. Well, let's take a look. This is a 13 to 15-story building. It has several restaurants in it. It's going to have swimming pools in it. It has several of the floors are dedicated toward dormitories for young men to come in from all over the world. Does it sound like a mosque to you?
Wow.
It's not a mosque. It's a rabat. And, I have, I was at a conference in Washington, D.C. on the persecution of minorities, of religious minorities in the Middle East, and there was a gentleman there who was actually a secularized Muslim, and I used the term, and I turned to him and I said, "Am I wrong?" And he said, "No, you're right. It's a rabat. This is what it is." And it is worse than what anybody thinks, and it goes back to the Sharia issue. Because one of the greatest accomplishments that particularly the wealthy Muslims want is for Sharia finance. And by the way, Citibank, which is owned by the United States of America, basically, is issuing Sharia-compliant bonds.
Now, explain this for those, we got about 2 minutes left, but for those that are not familiar with Sharia finance, I know that the Obama administration is pushing Ireland to accept Sharia finance. What is Sharia finance for those that haven't
heard
of it?
Well, Sharia finance, among other things, the bonds are structured in such a way so that the money you make off of them doesn't appear to be interest, even though that it still isn't. But a portion of the money has to go to, quote, Islamic charity, unquote. Well, guess what that Islamic charity is? You have to have an imam on your payroll or some other religious council to determine where your charity money goes from your Sharia. And I have 2 minutes. I can't go into all the dictates and in the in and outs of it. But basically, it's causing Citibank and many of our other big financial institutions to support terrorism through the back door. This will give a presence on Wall Street for continued push for Sharia finance.
Wow. Well, let's. There's so much I want to get into, but the clock's ticking away. We have just a couple minutes left. There's the music there. Give us your last 30 seconds to our audience, Bill, and then we'll give your websites again.
One of the things I have at our website is three things about Islam. Three things about Islam. And if you can't find it at my website, look it up and Google it up. Three things about Islam. It's a YouTube video. I didn't do it, but every American should watch that and understand what Islam is. Three things about Islam.
On YouTube.
YouTube, that's right.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. You're always a great inspiration, waking us up, giving us information. Thank you for your 30 years of being on the front lines fighting this battle for us and being our guest today. We'll have you back on again soon. Ladies and gentlemen, the website, no911mosque.org, and the other website is religiousfreedomcoalition.org, religiousfreedomcoalition.org. Our guest today has been William J. Murray. He is a champion, and you've been listening to Bill Federer with American Priorities on the Freedom Radio FM network. Become a friend of Freedom Radio. Go to freedomradiofm.com, and you can support us a little bit a month. And my website, americanminute.com, you can buy my books or sign up for my free daily email, The American Minute. Thank you, and as we pass to posterity, the blessings of freedom. See you next time.
This has been American Priorities. The opinions and views expressed on today's program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or sponsors of this station. Tune in again as we cover the crisis confronting our country and see them come into focus in light of history. That's next time on American Priorities. Rebroadcast of this program is strictly prohibited without the express written consent of American Priorities and the Edgewater Broadcasting Network.